Hello and welcome to Guy Perryman Interviews. Our travel companion today is Adium, fashion creative director and drag queen, who lived in Tokyo as a fashion store and dance floor star for a number of years, and is back to participate in Tokyo Rainbow Pride 2024 and iconic LGBTQ+ The Ring Party. The conversation took place on the roof in Jingumai, Tokyo in April 2024 and was first broadcast across Japan on my InterFM radio show. For copyright, the music has been edited. Enjoy the journey. It is wonderful to welcome on board, back on board, Adium. Hello.
Thank you so much for inviting me back, Guy, after all these years.
How many years? I'm so glad to have you on the other side of a microphone again.
I think the last time we interviewed was the late 90s.
Radio on.
You invited me on to discuss my top 10 songs of all time.
You know, and I remember one of them specifically, which I'll talk about later too, because it's a fab piece of music. And you're going to choose some more music for us today.
Yes, I am.
Yippee.
You've asked me for three of my favorite songs.
Yay. We're going to talk about Tokyo. You're back in Tokyo. But first of all, when you're out and about and you meet someone for the first time, they always ask that question, what do you do? What do you say now?
Well, I'm still doing the same thing as I've always done. I'm a creative director in fashion. I'm still working in fashion. I'm just about to launch my online store that's focused on recycling and upcycling fashion goods and interior goods. I'm doing that from Thailand, but everything is from Japan.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so it's focused on used goods from Japan. And yeah, I'll be launching that this year.
How long have you been in Thailand for? And how long were you in Japan for?
I was in Japan for 15 years, from 1995 to 2010.
Right.
Then I moved to China for 5 years, and then I spent about a year in Hong Kong, and I have been now in Thailand for 8 years, absolutely loving it. I was 6 years in Bangkok, in the Big Mango, and then during during COVID, I made some life changes, and I decided to relocate to the beach while COVID was on, because everything was shut down, and then I thought, I'll move back to Bangkok when COVID's over. But I really fell in love with my new life on the beach, at the beach, and I'm still there.
Which beach?
I'm living in a small coastal town that's about 250 kilometers southwest of Bangkok called Hua Hin.
Oh.
Yeah, it's a beautiful coastal town. A small town with great infrastructure. It has a King's Palace there.
That's right.
It has an airport. It's actually called the Royal Coast.
Oh.
It's got beautiful beaches. And I live between the mountains and the beach. But just I live a 10-minute walk from the beach.
So the work you're doing now, you're doing from home?
Yep.
Fantastic.
Yeah, I've been working from home since I relocated to Hua Hin.
Mm.
So I'm really enjoying not having to get up in the morning and go to work.
And I'm sure in Thailand on the beach, you can wear whatever you want.
I do. Well, I always make sure that I'm still looking glamorous.
You are today as well.
So I've got a great collection of very colourful kaftans.
I love it. Brilliant.
And big summer hats.
I'm going to see you there real soon.
Yeah, well, you're welcome to come visit.
When we first met back in the 1990s here in Tokyo, we met behind glass. There I was at the Shinjuku Virgin Megastore behind glass at the DJ booth, and you were behind glass in a shop in Harajuku designing and sewing fashion. What were you doing? What was that? That was amazing.
My goodness, that's you have such a great memory.
I remember it so well.
I can't remember what I had for lunch yesterday.
Well, you were like a bit of a fashion superstar in Harajuku. It was like,
I was.
Who's that amazing person behind the glass there?
Yeah, I'll tell you a little bit about that. When I first came to Tokyo in 1995, I didn't know anybody. I came here on my own, and I actually knew one person from my early days in London called Yoji Ino.
Oh.
He was a fashion designer and image consultant. And when I came here, I met a group of people very quickly at a place called Las Chicas.
Oh, back in the day, that's where I had the radio on studio.
Yes, and through that place, I met Yoji. So we became friends again. And I only stayed here 6 months when I first came, because I was traveling around Southeast Asia. So it was part of my travel plan. And then I carried on with my travels. I went back to London and I was working for a milliner called Stephen Jones. And
who has been on my show a number of times.
Yeah, we're very good friends. I used to work for him because I told him I want to go back and live there. So he said, listen, I know a lot of people in Tokyo. I'm very well connected there. I've been working for Shiseido for many years as consultant, but one of my very good friends is called Hitomi Okawa. She's like the Vivian Westwood of Tokyo. So he said, when you go back, go and see her. He gave me her contact information. I went to see her. I brought her some samples of clothes that I'd made, and we instantly fell in love with each other, and she offered me a job.
Wow.
So She is the owner and creative director of Milk Inc. So they've been going since the 70s. They have a brand called Milk for Girls and Milk Boy for Boys. And then she had this kind of artsy London style brand called Obscure Desire of Bourgeoisie.
Love that.
And at the time, no one was designing it, but they had had a history of British designers working there. One of them was called Lee Sheldrick, who was one of the original New Romantics from back in the day in London. And she gave me that position. She said, listen, we need someone, and I think you'd be perfect for this job, and just do whatever you want to do. So I was in charge of everything. I was in charge of the menswear, the womenswear, and the accessories, and I used to do the store interior. So she said, you look very good. You're kind of like visual candy. So can you dress up during the day and come to work? And I want you to be kind of like an installation in the shop. I want people to look at you working. Would you mind that? I said, are you kidding? I'd love that. So that's how that came about. You know, lots of people would come into the shop and look at me working. Mm. And I'd be in drag. Mm. I was in drag 24/7 in those days. So that worked out really well for all of us. And because of that, you know, I became very well known.
And then, of course, you were hosting so many events and club events here in Tokyo, again, dressing up. But I remember at one point, I think you got tired, as you can with anything. And I remember you saying you can't go out anymore because going out, have a drink or go to the dance floor and have a night off. Whenever you go out, it's always like you're on.
Yeah.
I remember you getting exhausted with that.
It's true. Actually, the first night I went out in Tokyo, I went to the gay area. I discovered the Nichome. Someone told me about that. And they said, oh, this is a party called Inner Ring. It's run by this American guy called Monty. You should go there. So I went there. He met me and he said, oh my goodness, who are you? Where are you from? What's your name? Do you want to work on, at my party called The Ring? You could be the door bitch. He said, it's this Saturday. So I said, yeah, okay, why not? So I was just thrust into the limelight immediately. And then we became like almost like business partners. I became one of the organizers of The Ring, but I was more in charge of the visual identity of The Ring. So I would do the flyers, book the show times and do that type of thing. And then I started doing more and more parties, right? Then I met Raymond and we started doing parties together. So at one point, I think I was doing about 6 parties a month, which is a lot. Mm. And I was working full time. And after doing that for several years, I had a major burnout, which is not very nice. And then I went away for a few months. I came back and started the whole thing again. And then I had another burnout about a year later. I left Tokyo for 4 months and just went to Bali and did nothing. I just sat on the beach and tried to figure out how to navigate myself through these times because I was a wreck. Mm. Physical, emotional and spiritual wreck. I worked too much. I partied too hard. I didn't get enough sleep and I just did not take care of myself. Mm-hmm. So when I came back, I had a meeting with Monty and I told him, I can't do this anymore. I need to focus on my career. It's been wonderful, but I'm done. Mm-hmm. Because it was just too draining.
Mm-hmm. Here you are all these years later, back for the ring party in Tokyo. It's the week of Tokyo Rainbow Pride. We're going to talk about that in a moment. But first of all, Adium, I have asked you to select some all-time favorite music. What's your first choice?
I was thinking about that on the way here because that's such a difficult question to ask.
Everyone says that.
I want to say that throughout my life, I've been through different stages of my life. Just call it each decade you go through. You change, right? In your 20s, your 30s, your 40s. And during those decades, my music tastes changed as well. Like in my 30s, I was into EDM, electronic dance music, because I was in the clubs in Tokyo. So that's all I listened to. Mm. So my music taste has changed from my 20s, 30s, 40s and 50s. But some songs stick out. And one song that's always been a great song globally resonates with me right now because it's an anti-war song. And because the world is in chaos right now, this song resonates more than ever with me and I hope with everyone else. And it's a song written by a British songwriter called John Lennon.
Oh,
Imagine.
Can the world please have some more peace?
We would love that. So please listen to this song.
Adium, you are back in Tokyo. You had your burnout on the beach and now you're chilled out on the beach in Thailand, even better. But here you are back in Tokyo to host another ring party.
It's so exciting to be back after all these years to host the ring party. Actually, last year was the ring's 30th anniversary and Monty said, please come back and host it. I wasn't particularly interested in doing it anymore because that's my old life and I'm not the same person anymore. But I thought, yeah, let's go. And it was such an amazing thing to do. I'm so pleased that I came because it was such an amazing turnout. Lots of our old customers, Japanese, they're very loyal people. Mm. And such a great turnout. And it was lovely seeing everyone. I didn't get a chance to even go on the dance floor because I was busy chatting and talking to so many people. Here we are again a year later and Monty said, we're doing it again. We've been asked by Jam 17 in Kabukicho Tower to host the ring party there again. Would you please come? I said, of course, I'd love to. So here I am back again hosting it. And I've been sewing costumes for the past 2 weeks, which has been also very enjoyable.
Yay.
A lot of hard work.
Oh, I can't wait to see you.
I can't wait to wear them.
Have you always loved dressing up? What were you like as a very young boy?
Yes, I was into the same thing. I would dress up as, witches or fairies or when I was younger. That just kind of carried on into my teens. When I was a teenager, that whole gender bender movement in music and fashion was happening. So of course I got sucked into that. You know, I was following like Steve Strange from Visage, Boy George from Culture Club, Pete Burns from Dead or Alive, and those types of people who were, you know, famous during those times. And I was their biggest fans. They were my heroes. So I got into that. But even before that, you know, I was into David Bowie, who was a master at changing his identity and blurring gender and using theatrics and lots of makeup and costumes. So I was very inspired by that from probably as young as 10 or 11.
And how do you think the world is today? I mean, there's been incredible positive changes for the rainbow community, for want of a better word.
Yeah.
Do you think the world's got better? If you were a very young person now, would you be feeling even freer than you were back then, do you think?
I think there are people doing now what I was doing 30 years ago and 40 years ago. That's still this group of people who dress up, they blur gender. For example, drag. I was doing drag. Mm. I was a drag queen, but I was a very alternative drag queen. But if you look now at RuPaul's Drag Race, which has become a phenomenon around the world and is now hosted in, I think, 10 or 11 countries, it's everywhere. Mm. So yes, we know that people are still embracing drag, and drag is basically a celebration of identity. And drag queens are entertainers. So, you know, it's become so polished and so international. The world is more aware now of diversity in terms of sexuality or gender or fashion or many different things. Is it any easier for people in those communities? I'm not sure. I mean, you know, you have countries around the world now, like Uganda and Russia, who are making laws against LGBTQ. So for some people, it's worse than it was 30 or 40 years ago. Mm. It's going back to like Victorian values. And then other countries, gay marriage is legalized in many countries around the world. And actually, Thailand has just legalized gay marriage, which is really good for them.
We're waiting here in Japan.
I have to say, though, that for the trans community, trans people in Japan, for some reason, have either been more politicized or the government has looked upon them as something very specific, and it has allowed them to change their birth certificates and to get married. And that has been allowed, I think, for at least the past 10 years, if not more, maybe even 15 or 20 years, which is very progressive. So on one hand, the Japanese government are very compassionate and kind to the LGBT community. And on another hand, they're not.
Mm. And I think as a society, I've had this conversation with so many people, as a society, because it's a very respectful society, people look after each other in the sense of a community, as a society, keeping the fabric of society peaceful and civilized.
Yeah. And also what I found when I lived here is because there was not a lot of homophobia, the gay community didn't need to become politicized and march against that. Mm. Whereas, for example, in other countries across Europe and America, for example, Americans, the LGBTQIA plus community has always been heavily politicized because there was so much hatred towards their community and a lot of homophobia and transphobia. Mm. So they wanted to stop that. Mm. Whereas here, it never happened. Mm, mm. So I think that that's why that community here hasn't moved forward as quickly as other countries. Mm, mm. Because like you say, they live very openly and without a lot of prejudice or violence against them. Mm,
which is why I love living here. Inter FM is official media for Tokyo Rainbow Pride, and our catchphrase is "Find Your Colors." for anyone listening right now, if they're trying to find their color, if they're trying to find out who they are or who they want to be in life, and you've found your color, you've always found your color, what would you say to someone?
Well, I think that authenticity is very important. People can sense when someone is authentic, really being themselves. For me, what happened, because I was working a lot in nightlife, you kind of develop this character that you switch on at nighttime, and that's not really who you are. So I struggled with that quite a lot. You're asking me, how do you find yourself? That's a tough question. But for me, I think being in a relationship really allows you to discover who you are, because suddenly you have someone who your partner will put a mirror up to your face and say, this is who you are. This is how you behave. This is what you do. This is how you think. And that for me was the first step in really understanding who I was. You know, Guy, I've been in long-term relationships my entire life. I've hardly ever been single. I was in a relationship from 14-year-old to 17-year-old with a boy. Then I was in a relationship with a woman from 17 to 18. And then I was in a relationship with a guy from that age until my late 20s. And so during my teens and 20s, being in those relationships really enabled me to understand who I am because of how I interacted very intimately with someone. So that's how I found out who I was, through being in relationships.
That's amazing. I don't know if I can ask you about this, but you're a dad. You have a son.
I am.
Do you call yourself a dad?
I do. Well, I call myself a parent, but my son calls me Papa. In the late 90s, my first job, fashion job in Tokyo, was with, I told you, with Milk. And my assistant at the time, Japanese woman, came out to me as being a lesbian. So we became great friends, best friends, actually. And then she started dating this lovely woman. They're still together. I think they'd been together about 3 or 4 years, and they decided they wanted to have a family. So they asked me, would I help them? Because they both loved me so much, and they wouldn't want anyone else to be the father apart from me. I was totally shocked at that question. I needed to think about that, because I thought being a parent is a huge responsibility. And I was very irresponsible during those days. You know, I wasn't settled. And by that, I mean, I was just too busy focusing on my two separate careers in nightlife and in fashion that I just thought, I don't have time for anything else. And of course, I was going out and partying. So you cannot do that as a parent. I spoke to my family back in the UK, and they said, we think it's a really great idea. We think you should do it. So I said, okay. So I had a discussion with the girls, and 3 years later, they said, okay, we're ready. Let's do it. And we did it. And my son is now almost 18.
Wow.
Yes. He's just about to go to university to study IT. Him and I have the most brilliant relationship. He's one of my biggest fans, and I'm one of his biggest fans. I've always told him, you are one of the most luckiest boys in Tokyo, because you have a very privileged life in that you have three parents.
Yes.
Actually four, because I've always been in relationships. You are multicultural. You are internationally minded, and you are very, very lucky. So always remember that. Because listen, my parents did the same to me. My parents understood from very young that I was different. And I think they tried to encourage me through the way they spoke to me. So my mother always said to me, you are very special. Never forget that. There's no one like you. You can do anything you want in the world. And my father kept saying similar things. You're a great kid. I'm so proud of you. Whatever you want to do in life, we will support you. And listen, those words were not just words, they were actions. But being raised with that kind of under your parents' words, it really affected me, because it made me super confident. And I still have that confidence today. And I always thanked them for using those words with me as a child. It made all the difference, because they knew I was gay or trans. They weren't quite sure. However, we did not have the language in those days to discuss that. That narrative was not popular. So they didn't quite know how to discuss that with me. So instead, they used the words that they used.
But how brilliant, you know, having that solid, supportive base stabilizes you for the rest of your life.
And so the only thing that I knew about being a parent was from my parents. So I thought, they raised me the best way. So I'm going to do the same.
Yay.
And then I watched an interview with Grace Jones. I think it was Jonathan Ross. And he said to her, he asked her about how she was a parent, because she also has a son. And she said, I've never, ever said no or don't or anything negative to my son, ever. And I thought, wow, that is such an amazing thing. I'm going to do the same. So I've never said no to him or don't. I've never shouted at him. I've actually never, ever had to discipline him, because all I've done is have very calm, strategic conversations with him. And I always said, if you do that, that might happen to you or to this person, and they might not like that, or they might get hurt, or you could be in danger. So please think about that. And it worked.
Wow.
Yeah.
You need to write a parenting book.
Yeah, I could. However, I was a full-time parent for the first 5 years, and then I left Japan. So after that, I was kind of like a part-time parent, because I would just come back to Japan 3 or 4 times a year, or he would come to visit me wherever I was living. And because our time was very limited, I just said to him, let's have real quality time together. Let's do things that we both enjoy. You show me the things that you love, and I will show you the things that I love. And so that's how our relationship grew.
Mm. Now that he's a teenager at that age where he could rebel against family and parents, yeah. How is your relationship, all of you, all four of you?
It's amazing. Like, I arrived in home last night at 11 p.m. and the four of us just sat round in the living room, giggling, laughing, drinking, eating, and just having fun like we always do.
Fantastic.
We are a very alternative family. However, we have the same family values as most families. We love our child. We love each other. We've nurtured him into being a kind, considerate, compassionate human being. He's very much aware about gender and sexuality from an early age, because he understood that his family unit was not the same as his friends at school. We had the best relationship. I couldn't ask for a better son, and I couldn't ask to be a part of a better family.
How brilliant.
Yeah.
Let's have some music.
Okay.
What's your second choice?
My second choice is a love song.
Oh, perfect.
Actually,
timing.
all of my song choices are love songs, because I told you I went through very different stages in my life. The music at that time was affected by my lifestyle. So right now, again, because the world is in chaos, I think that we need to spread a lot of love and affection. So I've chosen a song by Simon and Garfunkel, I Only Have Eyes for You.
Adium, you're selecting some favourite music, and you've got a lot of love in your music. I always speak with people about the power of music. And for you, have you always turned to music if you've had a tough time in your life? Was music always there for you?
Absolutely, it was. I've always loved music. Music's my flower. Music's my passion. And my family grew up loving music. So there was always music on in the house. If it wasn't the radio, you know, we had a record player,
yes,
or a tape cassette.
Yep.
And one of the first things I remember wanting as my Christmas present or birthday present was something to do with music. So it was either a vinyl, or it was a cassette player, or a record player. Music's always been such a huge part of my life. And also, as a teenager, you know, music was connected to youth culture and to fashion.
Yeah.
Because,
yeah,
I've always been into that. You know, you had what was called tribes, and tribes developed out of music. So, for example, go back and look at rock and roll. With rock and roll, there was a very specific language, there was a very specific hairstyle, there was a very specific costume for people into rock and roll, right?
Mm-hmm.
Look at, for example, hippies in the 70s, or disco, and then punk, and then that led to new romantics. So there's always been this very strong connection between music and fashion. So yeah, it's always been such a huge part of my life. I mean, the first thing I do in the morning when I wake up is put on music. Not TV. I never watch TV.
Same.
I only listen to music.
Mm. You mentioned tribes, which I think is really interesting. And when I was young, I always remember that fear of gay people being lonely. Oh, you're going to be lonely when you're old.
Mm.
And I always thought the complete opposite, because when you were gay, you could just go to any old town, any village, find the village gay, or you could go to any city in the world, go to a gay bar, and you'd have a built-in community instantly. You wouldn't always meet your best pals
That's
there.
So
you,
true.
You could find a community, a safe space.
Yeah.
But I fast forward to today now, and you mentioned music tribes. How do you think people find their tribes now? Obviously, social media has changed everything.
Yeah, I was just going to say it's social media, right? I think it's something that, for example, I just look at my son and the different stages he's gone through as a child when he was 12, 13, 14, 15, because they start to change quite a lot during those years, right? He's just now kind of getting a lot more into music than he was, say, 2 years ago. You know, 2 years ago, he was still into sports, hanging out with his friends, going to eat ramen or going to the cinema. He wouldn't go to a DJ bar or anything music related, for example, go to festivals. But now, at 18 years old, he wants to do those things. Hmm. I think it's age related and youth connected. The bands and the music that we loved in our youth, when we were 18, 19, we probably still love them more than anything else.
I went to ABC Live in London 2 months ago. The Lexicon of Love on stage with a full orchestra. That album in 1981 or two changed my life.
Yeah, I can understand that. And I think the music that I got into when I was 16, 17, 18, it did change my life. It gave me some kind of a pathway to follow. And through that pathway, I found my tribe in London. People, we were all into the same type of thing. Those people that I met when I was, say, 18, when you could start going out and start drinking, going to clubs, they're still my friends today. We've never lost contact. And we still all listen to the same music.
There you go.
Yeah, I mean, not all the time, but I still love to play electronic 80s music.
Adium, when you were here in Tokyo back in the day, everyone knew you as Anthony.
Yes.
You changed your name.
I did.
Why?
Actually, I changed it when I left Japan. Something very strange happened to me during those years. I left in 2010 and I wanted to almost escape from the life I had here and reinvent myself in a new country. And one of the things I decided to do through that reinvention was to change my name. Not because I was ashamed or about my previous life in Tokyo. I just wanted to try something new, something different. And also, I wanted to change my lifestyle. So I thought about changing it all. So I thought, I'm going to change my name. That wasn't the main reason. But also, I wanted a gender fluid name. And I wanted to embrace more my femininity and reduce more my masculinity. I've always been very androgynous. When I was a young child growing up, everyone thought I was a girl. I looked like a girl. I sounded like a girl. That was very prevalent throughout my whole life. And even then going into teenage years, I told you, then I embraced this whole gender bender movement. And that just kind of carried on. Then at specific times in my life, I embraced more my masculine side. At times, I've embraced more my feminine side. So I was always kind of jumping from one to the other. And then when I left Japan in 2010, I decided to totally embrace my femininity. And I had a much more feminine identity. And that name, even though it's not a feminine name, it's very gender neutral. That became my name.
Where did you get the name?
I want to say I'm the only person in the world with that name.
I love it.
There's no one in the world with that name.
You made it up.
I thought I did. It's a play on entomology and etymology, the study of insects and the meaning of words.
Yeah.
Actually, the word adium is the name of the largest migratory locust.
Well, I didn't know that.
No one knows.
Right. Not general knowledge.
It's a Latin word.
Right.
Also, I wanted to honour my ancestors. And I'm named after both of my great-grandfathers. And my initials of my name are ADM. And I kept saying it over and over again. And then it just became ADM because I wanted it to flow more. I thought, that sounds really interesting. What is that? And I searched online and I couldn't find anything. And then I searched deeper and deeper and deeper. And then suddenly I found it, the study of insects.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah.
I love it. ADM. And it has got a really beautiful flow.
Yeah.
I tell you what, my name is not gender neutral. Guy. I don't know what to do with that. Have you ever wanted to transition to be a woman?
Listen, I've never identified specifically as male or female. I had quite an unusual upbringing because I have six sisters and no brothers.
Six sisters?
Yes.
Crikey.
And I'm bang in the middle. I'm the third of seven. My father was a workaholic and busy working to sustain a family of nine people. So he wasn't around that much. So, Guy, I grew up in a girl's world. I grew up surrounded by women. I had no male peer models. And I wasn't raised as a girl. I mean, my parents were very conscious that I was a boy. They didn't keep saying, you're male, you're a boy, so behave like one. So they just let me become the person who I wanted to be. I had very liberal upbringing. And as I've got older, I told you, I've just embraced a more feminine identity. And that's where I am right now. I'm not looking to have any kind of gender reassignment surgery. I never have. I can't imagine that I ever would. So I guess, you know, with the new generation, Generation X, they have identified these new labels like gender fluid, non-binary, this type of thing. So I've always been that. And also, I just want to touch on this very quickly, that when I was younger, everyone thought I was a girl. Then when I found my tribe, when I was 16, 17, 18, everyone called me she, her. Even my first boyfriend called me Miss. We're still great friends. He still calls me Miss. So I was always referred to as female. And, you know, gay men, they call each other she as a joke, kind of. But with me, they just said, oh, he's a she.
Yeah.
Look at her. Yeah. And actually, this is quite funny. Back in London, I was referred to as Shim.
Shim? I love that.
Yeah. Everyone called me Shim because I was so feminine and everyone thought I was a girl. So everyone called me Shim.
Brilliant.
So fast forward 30 years later, everyone asked me, what are your pronouns? And I would say, the same as they've always been, call me Shim.
Brilliant. Does anyone else know about that in the world? Has it been used?
I don't know. I don't think so.
Oh, I want to work on that.
Yeah.
For you now, or your whole life, you've had the best of both worlds.
I have.
Really?
I really know how it is to be male and how it is to be female. Yeah. I mean, for example, when I leave Thailand, I have a male passport, but they always refer to me as mom.
Really?
Always. I've never been referred to with masculine pronouns in Thailand, ever.
Tell them Shim next time.
I will.
Put that on your passport cover.
Yeah, that's hilarious.
Adium, you lived in Japan for a number of years. Here you are back again. We mentioned a couple of things about Japan, but is there one thing about this country, it can be tangible or intangible, that you love that maybe the rest of the world don't know about? Something you'd love to share with the world?
Oh my goodness, there are so many things. Challenging question. I think the people that make the country what it is, on one level, they are kind of neutral. And I don't mean that in a bad way. They're very neutral on many things. They're very understanding about both sides of the coin, right? I find they're very diplomatic people. They don't like taking sides always. They're very loyal people. They're very compassionate people. They are also very emotional people, but they just don't express that. So there are gems about the Japanese that are hidden, and it takes you a long time to understand that. You have to live here to discover that. Because when you meet a Japanese person out in the world, you don't think much about them because they don't talk much. They're not particularly self-opinionated. Or if you ask them questions about anything on the international stage or about life in general, it's always quite neutralized, quite basic. So they kind of come across as shallow when in fact they are not. And it was living here for 15 years that you really understand them as a nation, and you understand about their culture, and you understand just how amazing they are as people. Right, they have this exterior, but once you get past the exterior and get into the interior, then you really understand what an amazing nation of people they are.
Hear, hear to that. We're going on a journey. You can have your passport with Shim on the cover, your credit card and your mobile device. Is there one thing in life, apart from your loved ones, is there one other thing in life that you really need in your life?
I mean, again, looking at the world as it is today, and it's in such chaos, a couple of things that I need are tolerance and acceptance. That's what I need in my life.
Brilliant things to have. on your journey, you can have a travel companion next to you, someone from history or someone today. Who would you love to have a conversation with?
Oh my goodness. It would be one of my ancestors, probably my great-grandfather.
What would you love to ask him?
I would want to know about his life, his struggles, how he lived his life. Just general chit-chat, you know, nothing specific. But yeah, I would want to know about their life.
Do you feel you've become who your ancestors were? Do you feel that you mentioned your family earlier too.
Yeah.
Do you feel very strong? You obviously a strong connection with family.
I think family is everything to me. I was lucky, blessed to be in such a big family, a very open family, a very loving and accepting and tolerant family. That's all I've ever known. So when I went out into the world, I was shocked at how hostile the world was and still is. When you start meeting people and you become friends and then you learn about other people's lives and how they were treated by their families or the stories about their ancestors, it really upset me and shocked me. And then I realized, wow, I am so lucky not to have been abused or to have been abandoned or treated like a punch bag. So that shocked me a lot. How unkind people can be, how unloving. That made me really care for people who'd had those life experiences, because I tried to imagine myself being in their shoes and I thought, I don't know how I would have been able to cope if that had happened to me. So it made me more caring and compassionate.
And you've chosen some loving music. You're up to your third and final choice today.
I am. I thought a lot about this, and my first two I got quite quickly. And the third one, on the way here to meet you, I bumped into a friend of mine. She's a Japanese fashion designer. Her name is Kyoko Higa.
Oh, I love Kyoko.
We mentioned you. And this is really strange because I came out of Omaru Sando train station at exit B4 outside our building. And I walked forward about 50 meters and I saw her coming towards me.
And you can never miss her look.
You cannot.
And the hair.
Yeah. And I was waving and then we met and she said, do you realize that when we first met all those years ago, it was right here at this traffic light?
Oh, wow.
And I was like, oh my goodness. Wow. It was such a moment that we shared and we hugged and I started crying. I was so touched.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, why is this happening right now? Something's going on in the universe. Something brought us two together at this very moment in time. So I walked down the street and I was feeling really emotional. And I don't know how this happened, Guy, but this song came into my mind and I started singing it. And it's by a female artist who died recently. She was a phenomenal force in the music industry and an incredible spokesperson for oppressed people all around the world. She's my Irish sister, my soul sister. Her name is Sinead O'Connor. And my third song is a cover version that launched her career. And it's a cover version by Prince and it's called Nothing Compares to You.
Fabulous choice and brilliant story.
Yeah.
And an amazing life story. Adium, thank you so much for being my pal for all these years and joining me again today.
Thank you so much for inviting me. It's been an honor sitting here with you and chatting. Thank you so much.
And thank you for joining us today. For more interviews and information, please go to guyperryman.com.